and welcome to another episode of the Tux Radar podcast. I am not Andrew Gregory because he's on holiday, but we are all here in a meeting room that smells of something like an old chemistry lab. In this episode, we're going to talk about Fedora being released, Mint being released, Fedora's booting problems with the new versions of Windows, new games, lots of games, a new Humble Bundle. We've got discoveries, we've got rants and raves and brains and an open ballot. As ever, if you love this podcast as much as we do, you can subscribe to Linux Format and keep us all buying beer and chips. It's $59.99 for 13 issues, and that's a saving of around £84.50, according to my notes, carefully arranged by John. Or that's £12.98 for every 3 months on direct debit. See the links on the podcast notes for more details. And then something else, it says something or other about buying 8 issues and getting 5 free with this offer.
Yeah, do you know, unsurprisingly, Future's website of detailing what subscriptions you can get, just not that clear. I couldn't make head nor tail of the final part, so, you know, something or other about buying 8 issues, 5 free, I don't know.
Okay, so in my best radio voice, I am Graham Morrison.
I'm Ben Averard.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Jonathan Roberts. So it's time for the news, and topping our bill of news this week is Fedora 17 and Linux Mint 13 have both been released in the last 2 weeks. Ben, since you're our disk editor, what do you think?
Well, Fedora chose to time their release perfectly with our preparations of the disk, releasing it a day after our disk deadline. So
Somehow we still got it on the desk.
Yeah, somehow we still got it on the desk.
Lots of phone calls and FTP sessions later.
Indeed. So naturally, because of that, I dislike it for making me work very hard for a day. But other than that, no, it's a good release. It's got GNOME 3.4, which isn't as bad as GNOME 3.2.
It doesn't require hardware acceleration anymore.
Talking about this, brilliant. I didn't realise that. So it works in a VM much better.
Yeah, you should do. GNOME 3 will be there.
I might actually try it now.
And it just contains all the usual updates you'd expect from a new Fedora release.
There's some cool software in there, but we're in there. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Karen.
There is some cool software in there that I was looking at last month, including OpenShift and OpenShaft. And,
Which are?
I couldn't tell you the difference between them off the top of my head anymore.
What are you talking about them?
But they're quite cool. Basically, they're for rolling your own cloud. So if you want to create your own private version of Amazon EC2 and Amazon's S3 storage, you can do it using software in Fedora, which is pretty cool. What about Linux Mint, Graham?
I was going to say, I think it's really cool that Fedora 17 booted on a Mac.
Yeah, with UEFI. That has been possible since about 2008-09.
I just didn't realise.
So now it boots off both a CD and a USB stick.
That's pretty cool.
So it's just an ISA hybrid image.
Right, that's nice.
I say just an ISA hybrid image. They worked a lot to get it to work off an ISA hybrid image.
Mint looks great from what I've seen. I think it's a great distribution.
Effie, will you be upgrading?
I'm excited. I haven't seen the latest version, but I'm excited because I use Mint. I've got it on 3 computers at home, and they always work perfectly. They never crash. They never fail me. So I'm really excited to see what the new version brings, what the new features are. I know Ben just told me that Cinnamon is going to be the default desktop, isn't it?
It comes with the choice of Mint. Of Mate or Cinnamon.
Mint, Cinnamon.
I tried them both out. I was surprised the two seem to have come. They're almost identical now to the look. When I first tried them, I actually thought they'd misnamed it. I opened the Mate one, and I could have sworn it was Cinnamon. But after poking around, no, it turns out it is actually Mate.
So are they good? Is Mate any good? Is it stable now?
I only used it briefly, but I didn't have any problems.
Right, cool. Because last time around, they said, you know, Mate's here, it's a preview, it's a bit unstable, but...
Yeah, I assume by the fact they've put it in as a default desktop that they've done all their testing and it's stable, but I didn't use it enough to...
Excellent. While we're on distribution topic, we should talk about the fact that Red Hat, Matthew Garrett, has just clarified Fedora and Red Hat's position on UEFI and secure boot with Windows 8 certified hardware.
There was a couple of blog posts last week about it, wasn't there?
It was talking about Fedora last week, and now it was about Red Hat.
Yeah. Right.
And the situation basically is that with secure boot, you need a cryptographically signed bootloader to get the BIOS to load the bootloader so that it can guarantee that it's not loading malicious firmware that can damage your system before anything's even booted. So it's a really good feature in terms of security and what it can do for your system. But that also means that free software projects are going to have a hard time getting those keys onto the hardware to sign their software with. You know, this is kind of locking free software projects out of Microsoft compatible hardware.
You mean at boot time?
Yeah, at boot time. Yeah, because if you went, you know, basically if you went to install a Linux distribution that wasn't signed, then, and you tried to boot it, what could happen is that it would say, no, this is malware, it's not signed, we won't boot it. So people at Red Hat and around free software world generally have been worried about what will happen, and Red Hat have finally come up with the solution that they're going to pursue for Fedora. And presumably Red Hat 7 when that comes out later this year.
And the solution is to give Microsoft some money.
It's not going to Microsoft for money. It goes to FerriSign. And basically, through Microsoft and FerriSign, you're going to be able to pay $100 to get your own key that you can sign your hardware with.
Yeah.
And then I think that will then get distributed in for firmware manufacturers. But if not, you can load in your own keys into the firmware as well.
I believe what will happen is the firmware will come with Microsoft's key, and right. What this $99 will get you is your key signed by that key.
Right, okay. Right, so your key will work, basically. If you pay this $99, you'll get a key that will work. And this way, what they're going to do is they're not going to sign for OS and everything. They're going to sign a tiny little shim of a bootloader that will change very rarely. So this little shim will sit in between the BIOS and grub. So the BIOS will boot to the shim, and the shim will boot to grub, and grub will boot to the kernel. And the idea is this will be updated so infrequently that it will only have to be signed once and redistributed once and cause very little problems.
So could any Linux distribution use the same bootloader?
As far as I'm aware, no, because that will then, the shim will be signed, I believe, by Microsoft's key, but then that will have to be, well, that will only load codes.
It'll be hash against the rest of the file system.
Well, it'll only load code signed by Red Hat or Fedora's key. On the principle that if anything malicious got into there, it would then revoke the Fedora key.
Yeah, because basically the whole point of a secure boot is that everything has to be secure. So if your kernel were to load insecure modules, they would have hardware access and could do damage that way.
Yeah, it's crucial that it's only stuff that's on accesses the hardware. So it's only kernel and kernel modules and the bootloader that have to be signed.
Yeah.
You can put any unsigned software on it once you've got it up and running.
But so that's going to be very tough for other distributions who aren't willing to pay VeriSign.
Yep. But it's only $100, which most distributions probably could raise. B, but it's also a fair amount of technical work. So, you know, it is a solution.
Also, if you're using Microsoft's key, doesn't that kind of put you at their...
Well, I don't think it is actually Microsoft's key that's being used. I'm not 100% sure. It's a complicated series of posts.
So, who pays the $100? Does the distribution pay the
distribution $100? The distribution pays $100 to
VeriSign. Are they going to pay that for every single user of the distribution, or just
for every single version of the distribution? Right.
Yeah, just once.
They can then do as much as they want.
Yeah, you can sign as much as you want with the key that you get for $100.
Okay.
But so that's kind of the approach that Red Hat are taking to it. And the whole thing is going to have to be signed, you know, from the bootloader right through to the kernel and the modules. There's a lot of locking down going on there. And from a security point of view, if you're using it, it is quite a big advantage because there's some nasty real-world malware out there that gets your system before boot time. But there's also going to be the option, and Microsoft have just backed down on this, that all Windows 8 compatible x86 hardware will have the option to turn secure boot off.
So Microsoft have backed down. Originally
they said no, but now all x86 Windows 8 compatible hardware will have the option to turn it off. So other distributions will be able to install without any of this.
But presumably you'd have to go into the BIOS and find the option.
But then you have to go into the BIOS to change your boot order anyway. Yeah. So I don't think that's a big hurdle. But it is complicated as a whole, this whole situation.
Well, it is complicated.
That was a terrible idea originally by Microsoft, trying to stop.
Saying that you couldn't turn it off was a bad idea.
I'm really not. It is a good idea. I can see why it's being done. I'm just not sure how effective it might yet be.
Right. What, you think a lot of people will just turn it off?
I just can see so many other ways of getting to the hardware and the hardware being compromised.
Well, that's why it's not just a bootloader that's going to have to be signed. Yeah, it's going to have to be signed all the way through the stack.
It's still, there's always a way around. You know, PlayStation 3s are always cracked eventually. The same 360s. There'll be some weakness. The key will be leaked. You know, whatever will happen. And all of this effort, which just feels cynically like we're being kind of shuffled into somebody else's way of doing it, when I don't think this is the way we do it if we were to tackle the same problem ourselves as a community.
No, I think you're probably right. It is all the bad parts of trusted computing, really, by another name. But I do think, you know, Red Hat have got a solution here that should work for a lot of distributions, and, you know, should work for themselves, and that they've got Microsoft to agree that you can turn it off and that you can add your own keys. I think it's a really big deal. So, all in all, complicated, but something of a not as bad as it could have been sort of situation. But yeah, that was a long story. Something a little bit more lighthearted now. Loads of game news. Carmageddon Reincarnation is going to come to Linux after they successfully raised $600,000 on Kickstarter.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's going to be really cool, because Carmageddon was a fantastic game.
I never played it. I remember it being reviewed in Linux format.
Yeah. It was a great game.
Yeah. It was the one with the cars, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then also, Valve have finally confirmed that Steam is coming to Linux in 2012.
Brilliant news.
So sometime in the next 7 months we can look forward to that, and perhaps Left 4 Dead 2 being one of the first games to come with it. That's awesome. And the Humble Indie Bundle 5 is out. 7 days left if you want to go and buy it. And well, after buying it, it'll be redeemable in the Ubuntu Software Center as well, where it's already had 10,000 downloads. But
great. It's all for charity.
Yeah. No, a lot of it goes to charity as well, and it goes into developers' pockets, so it's really cool. And I would encourage listeners to go and buy it, because at the minute, Linux is looking a smaller chunk of the pie of overall sales so far, so it'd be good to bump that up a little bit. Anyone, any thoughts on any of those massive game stories?
Really good news. I mean, yeah. I know we've talked about Steam a lot. I'm not sure about Carmageddon. I'll have to play it, but This gaming on Linux is just brilliant. I mean, Trini 2 was released at the beginning of last month, which we didn't actually mention. I'm trying to get it reviewed in this current issue, and that looks like an incredible game as well. And if you're into gaming and Linux and you've got a bit of spare time, it's never been a better time to play around with stuff.
Yeah, and what's one of the great things is I like that it's not for big, super, first-person shooters. I like that it's more interesting, more novel games that you can get.
It does feel like we're turning a corner at the moment in gaming.
Yeah. Effie said before we started the podcast that is it me or does it feel like Linux has, you know, reached some certain kind of critical mass, where Ben was saying he hasn't actually met someone who hasn't heard about what Linux is when he's out and about, and Effie's saying it feels like it's being taken more seriously. And quietly, it really does. It really does feel like things have changed.
I just feel like even from the release or the launch from of the Raspberry Pi, the atmosphere and the environment in which even system administrators work and deal with has become a little bit more humanized, and also more optimistic about the whole Linux environment and community itself. It is quite incredible. I was saying about a friend, how disillusioned a friend is with the Apple devices and the amount of money he had to spend on this hardware, and it didn't really meet the expectations that he originally had. And gradually, some of the friends that I got back home, they also switching to Linux, and that is without even any influence really from people that know about the operating system. So yeah, I think there's a little turning point right now on the acceptance of Linux as an operating system, as a mainstream operating system.
We do have one more final piece of good news here, is that Microsoft is now offering Linux-based operating systems on Windows Azure Cloud Service, which is their equivalent of Amazon EC2, I think.
Good news for Microsoft, so that they stay in the competitive game.
Yeah, it is interesting that they backtracked on that, and before they weren't. It's interesting, the selection of distributions. I don't know if it's a comprehensive list, but SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, OpenSUSE, CentOS 6.2, and Ubuntu 12.04, but no Red Hat, despite CentOS being there, and Microsoft are supplying these images, so I don't know if you could roll your own or not. But
Not without signing them first.
Yeah. So, quite a positive news section, actually, I think, on the whole. That's it.
Excellent. So we move on to discovery of the fortnight. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Ben saves the day.
I've got two discoveries this fortnight. The first one is I was going to buy some music on my... I was going to buy it on my phone, but I've got a fairly rubbish Android phone that's not compatible with the Amazon client. So I trawled through, I went somewhere to download, looked through the various options, and I found Pymazon, which is a Python script that lets you download music from the Amazon store. Because Amazon do have a download client for Linux, but I think it was last supported about Ubuntu 9 or something stupid. And it was pretty rubbish even then. So these people have taken it on, and it's a free software project. And yeah, you can buy the music on Amazon, and that just gives you a little... I guess it's a key file, but I haven't looked into it. And you put that into Pymazon, and it gets your music for you. It'd be better if Amazon were doing it themselves, but that's great.
That's great. It's great that they've obviously provided the APIs for other people to access it.
I'm not sure if they provided them or if they were engineered.
You can use things like Banshee as well.
And, yeah, I just didn't like the interface for
it. Right, yeah.
On the DOS basis, it's always looks, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I tried it, but yeah, it just didn't.
So you're giving up on CDs now? That's it. You had enough CDs. You haven't got enough room in your house.
My CDs are all in my parents' house. I didn't lug them down with me to Bristol. And my second discovery, it follows on from the debate we had about Linux versus GNU Linux. And I was just on Wikipedia, as I am often. That's not the sole source of information in my articles, by the way. But I discovered that Linux wasn't actually the first name chosen by Linus. When he created the kernel, he called it Freaks, or possibly Freaks. I'm not entirely sure how he pronounced it, as in Free Unix. And it wasn't until he put it on a public web server that the person running, the FTP server, decided to change it to Linux without telling him.
It's definitely one for the pub quiz at the end of the year.
Yeah. So I was just thinking this might be a more RMS compatible name. If he doesn't like Linux, but GNU Linux is unwieldy, FreeX, it emphasises the fact that it's free. And to me, at least, it sounds a bit nicer than GNU Linux.
Yeah.
Linux still sounds better.
Yeah. It's easier to say Linux.
Or Linux.
Cool, thanks, Ben. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'll go next. My discovery is not new. Obviously, it's already been going on for a while. It's an application called Evernote
for
Android. I know it's compatible with Macs and so on and so on, but since I bought the new tablet, the Extreme, the Scroll Extreme tablet, I've synced the two things, my mobile phone on the tablet, and I always had problems with my... activities at home, such as my wife always uses a regular calendar, which I always ignore.
Really?
Yeah.
The things that you have to do.
Yeah, things I have to do, and things that the whole family's got to do, and all that sort of stuff. So I decided to, and I always find Google Calendar not complicated, but it's a chore trying to get through
the
month.
You get depressed when you look at all the lists. Yeah. What have you got to do on a Thursday then? Bring the bins in?
I haven't updated my schedule, but I'll let you know later on. Evernote, it's a fantastic little application, which is basically ruling my life now. Cause, I've got all my notes on my to-do things. Jonathan just pointed out a feature in which you can take a photograph with your phone or with your tablet, and then it sends a photograph back to the servers, and then they recognize the text. So if you're looking for a particular keyword, this particular photograph will will come back. Say, for instance, Jonathan was putting the sample of, I don't know, buying a bottle of wine in the supermarket. You take this photograph of this bottle of wine in the supermarket. Later on, if you forgot the name of the bottle of wine, then you can search on Evernote. So, it's a really nice application.
There's an open source version of Evernote. I can't remember what the name of it is.
Is there?
There's a project that tries to do exactly the same thing, but without the proprietary back end.
Right.
Because it does a lot, like the optical character recognition.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't go to that length.
Yeah. There is some quite good open source optical character recognition out there, actually.
Yeah, we've reviewed some in the past.
But it sort of takes you back to the good old days of scanning text. And what was the software they used to recognize text?
What, when you scan the entire Harry Potter series?
That's that sort of thing. The whole Bible. Anyway, Evernote. And the tablet, by the way, I know that it's a few online websites that have reviewed the Scroll Extreme tablet, and they didn't give a really good review, but I think they're wrong. I think that tablet is actually quite fantastic for the price.
Awesome value for money.
Yeah, well, you play with it already, so it's fantastic, especially compared to other Android tablets, such as the Asus, whatever it is, and the Motorola Xoom, that are really expensive and have bit of hardware, but what you need from a tablet, Scroll Extreme, it's definitely really, really good.
What sort of battery life do you find?
We were talking about this. On a regular work, it's about 16 hours.
And that's what you're getting?
That's what you get. But if you're streaming video online, then it does diminishes the power by a quarter, more or less. But it's still really good, though. It's still really, really good. Anyway, that was my discovery.
Cool. Thanks, Effie.
I've got a quick one. I found out that RPM has some really great query options. So if you got a package and you want to know what documentation it comes with, RPM QD will tell you all the documentation files installed and user share doc, all the man pages, all the info pages. It's handy if you're not sure where to look, you know, what the name of a man page might be or whatever. And also QC tells you all the configuration files installed by a package.
That's great.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're trying to configure SSH or whatever and can't remember the name of a configuration file or if it's an Etsy or whatever, then RPM QC, open SSH server, and it will tell you all the configuration files. So,
almost as good as Synaptic.
Well, they're two very useful features, so that's my discovery.
I haven't actually discovered anything, but I had what I thought was a good idea, which I thought I'd make my discovery. You know how we've been talking about how people can contribute and get recognized and things? Well, I thought that maybe we could set up like a trophies site for people, for contributors and for users of Linux. And I mean trophies in the same way that you get them on the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation Network when you get a certain number of kills in a game. So that, you know, you could get a bronze trophy for helping somebody on a forum, or a bronze trophy for filing a bug report, or better trophies than that, and different trophies for different kind of battles that you win in the open source world.
Isn't this what Johnny Bacon's been doing with Ubuntu recently?
Is it?
I can't think what it's called now, but he's got a thing where there's an app and there are trophies and
maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
But I was thinking Linux wide.
Yeah, that'd be cool, because this is just Ubuntu-wide.
It would never work, because it would mean some kind of, I don't know, regulation and someone to look after it. And
collaboration
people doing
between,
real work,
and collaboration but, between different Linux projects.
Which, but, you know, people are so keen to show off their gaming prowess that, you know, it'd be good. I mean, in the same way people used to have their Linux counter number to show what the kind of stuff that they've been doing. You know, a good way of encouraging people.
It might not be too difficult to do it something like GitHub-wide.
So
you could just do it on commits.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing I was thinking.
There are similar, again, is it Olo or whatever, which tracks developer statistics? So, like, this person's the top contributor of this project and stuff.
I was thinking of more, developers probably wouldn't care.
Yeah, but for users people having a forum. So I think it's a cool idea. Gamification's a really big idea at the minute, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's it, and that's our discoveries. Oh, I guess I'm going to have to do the halfway reminder. Okay, this is the halfway reminder. We're halfway through-ish. That's 25 minutes on the clock. Still to come, we've got Rants and Raves with John and Ben. Speak Your Brains, Ben's doing it this time, and I'm doing the open ballot. That's it. Rants and raves.
Time for rants and raves. This week, Ben's going to rant for a whole minute about... Are you going to rant?
I'm going to rant.
You're going to rant about something. You told me. What are you ranting
about?
I'm
going to rant about bootloaders, but you went and spoke all about it in the news.
Very sorry, Ben. Rant about it anyway.
I intend to.
Good.
It got me quite angry this week.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
And go.
Okay. Everyone understands. Well, a lot of people understand the need for a replacement to BIOS. You know, it's old. You know, it's 1980s technology, and it's got some bugs and vulnerabilities in there. Fine. But why do we have to turn its replacement into an opportunity to lock software down? And this isn't just Microsoft. It's happened in Apple as well. They've done a lot of work to try and keep other than Windows, other operating systems out. And yeah, we can now boot Linux into it, but that's basically because some developers have put a lot of time into reverse engineering their situation, like they did with doc files and I've done with hundreds of other things down the line. Now, we've reached a point now where surely compatibility with other systems should be a given, not something that we have to force upon companies. And with the UEFI, so what time am I? Oh, blimey. Yeah, key signed by Microsoft. We touched on it quite a lot. But the one point I'd like to, we didn't raise the news, is that Microsoft aren't legally required to continue signing people's keys. At any point, they could just stop and say, no, sod the lot of you. We're just going to let you run Windows on this hardware. Yeah, okay, you can turn it off.
Let him finish.
I'll go 10 seconds longer.
If anyone doesn't think that this is something they'd do, just have a look at how running Firefox and Windows RT.
Sorry, yeah. So, Ben was angry.
I'm getting angrier.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I did let you go 10 seconds extra for anyone keeping track at home. Cool, so I'm raving this week about... well, you'll see. I want to rave just generally about how much good stuff has gone on in Linux and related stuff over the past, you know, few months, really. You know, we had the Raspberry Pi launch, which was fantastic. So much good media attention and momentum, and that was really fantastic. And then we get all this good game news that we've had this week. And again, that's really cool, you know. We've got all these great indie games that are coming out, all these creative, good, you know, talented, thoughtful games. That's really cool. And, you know, with Steam coming on as well, potential for like larger titles as well. And then there's talk of a film suite. Is it Maya or what's the film editing suite that's coming out hopefully sometime in the next 6 months or so? That sounds really cool. And then also, you know, Red Hat making $1 billion in revenue. I mean, how cool is that? So, you know, Linux just seems to be going from strength to strength at the minute. I don't think we celebrate this enough. So I'm really excited to see what will happen in the next 6 months and see how this momentum continues to snowball. That's my minute.
Yay. Excellent. That was great.
It's just a shame we won't be able to run it on any hardware soon. Ooh, right, it's me now, isn't it? Okay, so moving on now to Speak Your Brains. We've got three this week that were sent into Graham and I've purloined them. So, the first one comes from Leo Mercado. I think I pronounced that correctly.
Is it Spanish? Mercado?
No. Mercado. I assume it's Scottish. And he says, it's less speak your brains and more here's some news. And the title, I should have mentioned first, is that Mozilla does not think desktop Linux is dead. And the reason for this, he points out, is that if you get the nightly builds of Firefox, the App Store is there. Right. I haven't tested this myself, so we'll have to trust Leo. But that sounds like good news.
Yeah.
After that,
I think we knew that there was a beta version knocking around somewhere that they'd got working, but yeah, for whatever reason, wasn't in the final release. That was another bit of news, wasn't it? I forget which number it was. Firefox something has been released.
It really has.
Number 13,
like 16 or something.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's great news. Anyway, and yeah, we've got the links to that, which we'll put in the podcast notes. For anyone who wants to try it. And the second one is from David George, and he says, hi Graham, I'm sure I don't have a particularly unique story here, but it's always nice when Linux makes good things happen, as I'm sure John will agree. Not long ago, the Windows Vista on my housemate's 4-year-old laptop learned about apathy and decided to crawl to a halt. She was buying a new laptop soon, and I put Linux Mint 12 on her computer and loaded music into Banshee. I chose the GNOME 3 fallback mode in Mint, as it seemed a more familiar interface. She was quite impressed and didn't have any problems. and Tetris or Gnometris or whatever it's called was a good addition. Several months later, she eventually bought a new computer and went back to Windows. Even though the result was more money for Microsoft, I'm happy that one more person in the world knows that Linux not only exists, but is useful.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I tell you what, I mean, talking about that, I'm talking about how easy it is for anyone to use Linux. One of the computers that I got at home is plugged into the telly. So I can watch Mexican television on it. And I think it was 2 weeks ago when I came back home, I find out my 8-year-old daughter, Rosie, using the BBC iPlayer on that particular machine. And I never trained her to use Linux. Mint. She knew, even she, I don't know how she managed to find out my password to use the computer, but...
Password's probably Rosie.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not. It's 1, 2, 3. But she was using it, and she didn't notice any difference between using Mint and for instance, using a Macintosh that I got at home, that's the one that she normally uses. So it was so familiar with the desktop that it was very easy for her to use Mint on that particular desktop. So.
Yeah, when I was working in Tanzania, we were using GNOME 2, as it was then. Mm. A few of the students had used Windows before, but not much. But everyone, just got on with GNOME 2. There was no particular problems. And, we switched the main panel to the bottom, so... It was in the right place, but other than that, it was just vanilla GNOME 2. No worries. Okay. Yeah, and the final speaker of brains is from Joseph Van Pelt. And he says, great show, guys. You guys have a great sense of humour that is lacking from other podcasts. Thanks, Joseph.
Hey.
He says that Google's Moog Synth Doodle, that's quite a mouthful.
Say that again.
Google's Moog.
We won't get into the fact it's supposed to be pronounced Moog.
Is it?
Yeah. But everybody says Moog.
Moog.
Google's Moog synth doodle worked for him under Linux anyway. And he ran it with what he calls everyone's favourite distro to hate on the Chromium browser.
Which distro is that?
Yeah, the same name that we hate. We love them all, really.
Let me guess.
To get on to the main body of his speaking, his brains. It's been rather interesting to me to see how fast the community has gone from loving to hating Ubuntu.
Oh, Ubuntu.
And by community, I assume he means you, Effie.
I am not campaigning against canonical and empty.
Well, John's going to go and meet Jane Silver tomorrow.
Just keep it alive.
Yeah, luckily it's tomorrow. And when are you going to post the podcast on Touch Radio?
Yeah, today, I know.
No, I'm sure Jane Silver doesn't listen.
Canonical, she does a wonderful job. Yeah. Things have really changed since she took over from that lazy sloth Mark.
I want to get out of this, but you're dragging me back in.
So, to continue with that.
Sorry, yeah.
The recent news that the Linux kernel was renamed Ubuntu kernel, for example, didn't contribute positively to the community, especially when we found out some of the folks had already shipped with the Fedora kernel in their release notes. Let's keep the flame wars down and stop all the infighting. Can't we all just get along?
I'll try. I will make an effort. I will say nothing about who were they?
They who may not be named.
Yeah.
We should make a Voldemort distro.
That would be more hated than the North Korean distro. And he goes on, I've been able to convert 3 people in the last 6 months because of Unity. He says they preferred the interface, so it can't be all that bad. Which is actually really interesting news. So obviously all the work that Canonical have been putting into Unity has paid off, which is...
I've read a few messages from people that have said they've blind tested people, put them in front of Unity, and people have had no problems with it, or they've it's clicked.
Yeah.
So, maybe it does work.
And that's, from what I hear, that's how Canonical designed it, for people, not for existing GNOME users, but for people just coming into it. And he says, it doesn't matter what people are using, whichever desktop environment. Let's try and make it through an episode without any Ubuntu hating. Well, we didn't manage this one, Joseph, but we'll try again in a fortnight's time.
I always said at the beginning, I really appreciate what Canonical did with Unity. I always said that. Now,
I remember one of our old podcasts when we used to do our challenges was to be positive the whole way through. That was one of the toughest ones we did. Yeah.
Yeah, so those were awesome Speak Your Brains. Thanks, guys. And if you want your brains to be spoken in the next podcast, send them through to Graham or myself.
You see, what I really like now of this podcast is that all the attention is shifting towards me now. Because the previous podcast,
it was Jonathan, alpha male.
Yeah, but it was Jonathan with his invasion of
America, the Americas.
The past invasion into Devon. So just now it's me.
Devon, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna switch from Mint to Ubuntu. My computer at home.
Okay, well, we'll move on from that to a real flame war, I think, which is our open ballot. What did we ask? Didn't actually write it down, actually.
I think.
Oh no, I've got it. Okay, yeah, sorry. Okay, we asked, what does Linus Torvalds know about interface design? This question was prompted from another one of Linus's posts on Google Plus. Is he sponsored to use Google Plus? Anyway, this is I've highlighted some parts of his post on Google Plus. It goes like this. Any GNOME 3 knowledgeable people out there, I broke down and upgraded my old aging Fedora install on my desktop simply because my Fedora 14 comes with an ancient version of X. But with Fedora 17 comes GNOME 3, and I knew I'd have trouble, but I also knew that most of the worst crap could be fixed with extensions, and I'd use 3.4 on my laptop enough to know it should all be somewhat usable. But Christ, it's a one step forward, one step back kind of thing. Change the font size, no can do, until you install the tweak tool, because the standard settings panel still doesn't do something fundamental as that. Okay, I knew it used to be broken, I knew the workaround, but it's still broken. There's about four more paragraphs of ranting there. Then he says, I have to say, I used to think the extensions.gnome.org approach to fixing the deficiencies in GNOME 3 was really cool. It made me go, now I can fix the problems I had. But it turns out to be a major pain, which basically ends up as a really magical way to customize your desktop, which breaks randomly and has no same way to do across machines. And the extensions seem to randomly break when you update the system, so they don't work as well as they should. End result, extensions.gnome.org may be really a good idea, but it seems to have some serious usability problems in practice. And the whole GNOME 3 approach of, by default, we don't give you even the most basic tools to fix things, but you can hack around things with unofficial extensions, seems to be a total user interface failure. Who do I need to get standard font sizes and panel options instead of having to wade through the kind of unsupported and random extensions that look ugly as hell and break randomly crap? Maybe if I told people I was going blind and claimed the font size as an accessibility feature, people would care. Never mind that I want to make the fonts smaller. So, classic Linus Torvalds rant. We asked, what does Torvalds know about user interface design, and should we be listening to him? Lots and lots of fantastic responses. Nearly every response was carefully worded and made a good point. I will start with Anonymous Penguin in SA, who was the first to comment. It's not about what he knows, rather than his preference. I just switched to the Ubuntu 12.04 from Unity and GNOME, and I guess the challenge is not about the basic configuration that one needs, but also dysfunctional OS. Let's have an upgrade, not because we are running after multiple releases, but because new features and functionality. I'll skip on to Grandmaster Hack, who said, can't tell if the issue is Fedora or GNOME, which is an important point. He's complaining about old extensions not working with the next iteration of GNOME 3. The only thing I added to GNOME Shell is an extension that puts a real shutdown button there, and that's it. I prefer GNOME 3 over Unity and KDE, etc., but I don't find it at all hard to use day to day. Another question I have is from the beginning. I've heard since Fedora 14 that it was buggy, unstable, and overall just not ready for desktops. And in the end, I can't tell if it's the average day in the life of a Fedora user or Linus Torvalds has found another excuse to take a jab at GNOME 3, which I think is an important point. Should Linus be using Fedora and then complaining about it being too edgy or unstable?
I guess his complaint isn't that it's unstable, though, is it? It's just that there's missing features.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
And none of his complaints would be invalid against vanilla GNOME 3.4.
Yes, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
And maybe, but then he said he'd used it on his laptop, so should he should have been aware of what had happened. So he's saying that the extensions broke on his desktop.
Yeah. Which I have seen. I have seen, you know, from version to version of GNOME, something breaks. It does seem to get fixed eventually, but
I think the extension site is really good when we initially talked about it, but yeah. I didn't expect it to become the principal repository for all things for configuring GNOME 3.
If it does, it has to work flawlessly.
And it has to work. It has to be worked and tested for upgrades.
Yeah. They release a new version, yeah. This has to work.
Okay, so Gregory Raw SW, I find it rather counter the free software ethos that Linus Torvalds to make these sweeping pronouncements. His contribution is the kernel, which of course he could have control over. On the other hand, GNOME are clearly free to do whatever desktop they wish. And if he doesn't like it, then he's free to use KDE, XFCE, which I think he's used most of at some point or another, to his heart content. He is one voice in the Linux world and isn't in the same way infallible. In some way infallible. He also seems to feel the need to express himself in a rather non-constructive way, telling devs to go and kill themselves and other hyperbolic statements. Just because the OS is named after him doesn't mean he's a poster boy for anything beyond the kernel, as each distro places varying software on top of the kernel. Perhaps he ought to give Mate or Cinema in the try like the rest of us if he doesn't like GNOME 3, which is a completely fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the one thing is, he's one of the few people that can actually get things changed, like with the OpenSUSE rant. Stuff got changed after, and it was fairly poor design that caused
the
problems.
Thing?
Yeah, the needing the root password for everything.
Oh, yes.
And very soon after that, changes were made.
But he's complained about desktop UIs before, and nothing has ever seemed to change because of that.
I do think my biggest complaint, I think he's open. He's more than entitled to his opinion. I do think he makes some worthwhile points, and I hope that he gets listened to. But I know he's frustrated, but I wish he said it in a more constructive
way. I completely agree with you, actually, yeah.
You know, it's all about the way you say something. You're going to put people on the defensive, they're going to be awkward, they're going to be less wanting to get on with you and do what you want. When you come at them like that, it's just not a good way to deal with
it. He is inflammatory, and it seems to be he enjoys it. I mean, he's like this in certain confrontations on the kernel mailing list.
Right.
You know,
If I was a developer of GNOME, and then I get that sort of criticism from Linus Torvalds, I would honestly change my view about what am I doing.
Well, you're not likely to say, you know something, Linus is right. He said something very important to us. I think we should spend a good while trying to change it and making him happy.
I'd like to see him get on the mailing list. I'd like to see him actually talk to the GNOME developers and, you know, say, look, why are you doing this? This really is awkward for me. It's difficult. A lot of people feel the same.
Yeah.
Please explain yourselves clearly and openly for us all to understand. Let's have a discussion about it that's polite and civil and everyone can see. And
it's not just GNOME. This is what I mean is that you as a developer of a particular software, you get criticized by one of the main voices on this, I don't know, community. Everyone is going to pick on that.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter whether what you're trying to do is good or bad, or you do it with the most noble intentions.
Yeah,
you're still gonna get absolutely hammered just by one single opinion of this particular person, and I think that is unfair in many ways.
Linus likes it or not, to some extent, he's the archetypal Linux guy. He's the Steve Jobs of Linux.
Exactly.
And you'd never see someone like Ballmer or Steve Jobs saying something about people on their team.
Well, you wouldn't see him public, but I bet things got said to the people
said.
On
of
the
course.
Team.
You read those stories about Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Toey71 I think he's on Linus's side. Well, I know nothing of interface design either, but a rubbish desktop is still a rubbish desktop. The GUI is supposed to be intuitive and not force a new paradigm for every iteration. Most people, Mac OS or Windows, use a menu system that's on the bottom of the screen and out of the way so that you're not actually working. Making the other way up is stupid on a 15-inch bigger screen. So he's used it as a rant to actually have a go at GNOME 3. Don Blass, I think his opinion matters, but not like any opinion. Anyone can and should feel free to disagree. I find GNOME 3 to be okay. I prefer it over Unity, but I still tend to use KDE and LXDE. Listen to Lynn. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think one thing that, you know, was it Gregory SW said it's against the spirit of free software? Quite like, you know, when Linus said that version control systems were no good and there wasn't anything that worked, he came along and wrote his own version and control system.
But he'd also backed a proprietary system himself and forced the kernel developers to use it.
Right. So
it was kind of, the ball was in his court if he was to find a replacement.
But I do kind of think, you know, if it bothers him that much, there's plenty of components out there. There's great toolkits. Go out and, you know, make your own.
He would
have the draw to bring people together to start a project along those lines. I appreciate he's a very busy man already. It's not a fair criticism to level, really. But I would be interested to see what Linus Torvalds came up with, because he produces quality, stable software.
Yeah, you've just reminded me of a comment, actually. Let me skip forward to it. This is from Toby. As Mike used to say on the podcast, it's always quite surprising, also disappointing, to see Linus using a GUI in the first place. You would think that everything that stands between him and the command line is too much.
Well, I actually quite liked in Linus's post, and you didn't read out, but he said that he uses the keyboard only for typing and the mouse for everything else. And I like that, because I do that. And other people, I just use this guy. I don't like using key combinations for stuff when I'm not typing. And people always used to make me feel inferior for that. But now I can say, no, Linus does it as well.
Lots and lots of comments, so I'll try and get through a few more. Yes, says Pinky with the Brain, which is one of the best names we've seen. Torvalds may not know much about interface design, as others have correctly pointed out, but I would want to point out that when GNOME developers decide to hide something as essential as the shutdown button, it suggests that they don't know much about interface design either.
Fair point.
CT says that he does some things right. In the comments to his recent G Plus post, Linus mentions that all the other desktop environments do not match his taste at the moment, and continues, GNOME 3 is actually fairly close in 3.4. All of my complaints are fairly small ones. What makes me sad is how these are not new issues, and how in the past at least GNOME 3 people have actively said we don't even want to fix them because we know better. Mm. I think that maybe is the cause of his frustration. We've talked about it in terms of the shutdown button option. Eric the Penguin. Linus, in my opinion, is just another annoyed user who doesn't want radical changes for no good enough reasons. I also dislike GNOME 3, and it's the reason why I'm using XFCE instead. GNOME 2 was one of the best desktops I'd ever used, and for a period of time I considered going back to Ubuntu 10.04. The community shouldn't be worried about what Linus thinks. They should treat his opinion with higher priority than the normal users like me. After all, he's the most important person in the development of the original kernel, which makes all these possible. Spanguages says, no, I think he understands workflow, which is part of good interface design. He understands the structural side of it, what an interface should allow you to do and what sequence things should come in and stuff like that. I don't think he understands the visual side of that, though, how to put that into practice. He goes on to say, but first we need to get those people to look at Linux without sticking up into their mouths a little. This could be done by being a bit prouder of and exposing the underlying elegance of the Linux system, and rather than trying to start it up like a six-year-old in their mother's makeup box, saying that this is what it does, how do we translate that into a visual symbolic language? Shall I carry on? There's just too much to read out, because some of the comments are great, so I would really recommend taking a look at them. Hugh, yes, no, in classic Hugh fashion. Linus is just a kernel hacker like any other. I see no reason to give his views on desktop environments any more credence than anyone else's. In other news, I'd like to invite John to my upcoming party. We're going to drink cocktails and experiment with unfashionable hairstyles.
Hi,
that sounds great, John.
Can I go? I've got a very unfashionable haircut.
I'd like to add that I've had a haircut since my photo was taken from the magazine. It's considerably different, and whether more fashionable or not, I don't know. But
no, I was going to say you look trendier.
Yeah, since I had it cut short.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I've gone back to the pilgrim look, which I think suits you.
The pilgrim look.
Yeah.
How? What do you mean by?
I don't know. It's just how I imagine you when I'm lying down in bed at night.
No.
Yorkshire Tyke, Linus Torvalds is just voicing his frustration with GNOME 3. He could remain silent and just switch to something else. Your mantra, there is always too much choice, but by giving voice to his frustrations, he is at least giving some feedback about the GNOME 3 UI. Hiaud says, I'm wondering, does he actually like anything Linux? These days he only seems to open his mouth to slag off one desktop after another.
And see, that's what I agree with that. It's just, I don't disagree with him giving his opinion. Otherwise, there's no democracy within life, obviously. But what I mean is, he's such an influential person. And whatever he's going to say is going to have a massive impact. Mm. And that is the danger. If he's going to be the standard of quality control within the development on anything related to Linux, then we're in big trouble.
Yeah, he's got to set the standard for other developers. When people complain about, you know, abusive behavior in forums or mailing lists or whatever, it's people like Linus at the head of the community who really have to set the standard and say, this is how we behave in this community.
Exactly.
I can sympathize with the name Free Developers because, you know, when people say that you got an unfashionable haircut or whatever, it hurts.
Okay, and we'll leave the last word to the prolific penguin. Prolific Puffin, sorry. Linus is spot on. What does Linus Torvalds know about desktop UI? Everything, and so do you. You use the computer every day, and if you're not comfortable with it, it's not right for you. Fortunately, this is Linux. We can change it to do what we like.
Get in.
Epic open ballot section.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the end of the podcast.
Yay.
We haven't got any one more thing. I can tell you that it stinks in this room, and I think we're all desperate to get out. So thanks for joining us.
And I need a pint.
Effie needs a pint. That's a good idea. It's another rainy day here in Bath.
I need a pie.
A pie and a pint.
Awesome. That's really good. Sounds like a trip to the Raven.
Thanks for listening. I'm going to have to edit this podcast after we've had a pint. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.